Hi, I'm Pete. I'm an alcoholic. Today is my belly button birthday. I don't see any presents, so I'm going to assume everyone's going to give me cash today. That'll work out fine. Like I said, I'm an alcoholic. I also did other substances, but never without alcohol. And I will mention the one time about another substance because it created a tsunami in my life 20-some years later. I started drinking fairly young, 10 years old, and I loved it. Oh, I loved it. I could be who I wanted to be. I could do anything. It gave me a sense of self-esteem, of pride. And as I progressed, as I grew older, you know, it started out on the weekend. You know, then by 13, the weekend started on a Thursday. Then when I'm 15, the weekend started on a Wednesday, ended on a Monday. And what we would do, we would save our lunch money. And also our money from our jobs we had, with the sole purpose to drink. Right out of the gate, I drank to get drunk, period. Just like it says in the big book. There was no, oh, I'm just going to have one. Screw that. That makes no sense. To this day, 20 years on this program, on this journey, that still makes no sense to me. Why someone would want to have one drink. Are you kidding me? You know, that just would make me mad. You know, I exhibited alcoholic tendencies even before I picked up that first drink. And unbeknownst to me, as I was drinking, I was doing some of the quote-unquote cures that they list in the big book before I even set foot in a meeting. This was brilliant alcoholic thinking. When I was 16, I thought, I got to get away from my mom. I'm going to go move to Minnesota with my dad, who had 16 years in the program. Tell me that's not alcoholic thinking, you know. But guess what? I showed up in Minnesota, and guess who was still there? Me. You know, in 5 minutes, I can find the boar, the whore, the party spots. Doesn't matter what town I'm in. I can find them. That's what I'm good at. You know, it's a liar, cheat, and a thief. Anything I could do to get more booze, I would do it. I went to college for a year at Western Michigan University. It was called Wasted Michigan. And back then it was I think number 4 on Playboy's top 10 party schools. Needless to say, after a year, they told me that my attendance was no longer required, because if I had an 8 o'clock class in the morning and there was a quarter of a keg of beer left, I got to finish the quarter keg of beer to get the deposit back to drink later on that day. You know, so then I did the brilliant thing. I joined the military. And it turned out the military was a great enabler for me. I was very good at my job. When I got back in country from the Middle East, I went to debriefing in Pensacola, Florida, and the next thing I know, I woke up in Canada. I still to this day do not know how I got to Canada and got back to Florida. So my commanding officer said, you know what, we're going to send you out to the West Coast. I said, all right. That'll work. I was still there. You know, I was still there. Boom, hooked up with the partiers just like that. I've been arrested or detained in 11 different states and foreign countries. I was kicked out of Mexico. The State Department had to get involved to get me released because evidently you can have too much of a good time in Tijuana. I did not get that memo. But that's what I mean by they were a great enabler for me. Because I did my job so well, they looked after me. And then I started drinking more and more and more, because if you did the things I had did, you would drink too. I had to kill the voices in my head. I had to fill this hole in my heart. And just like at Western Michigan University, I was told that my service was no longer needed. So I made the brilliant decision that I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to live on the streets of Long Beach and South Central and Crenshaw and Watts. I'm pretty light-skinned, if you didn't notice, because I was damned if I was going to let anybody tell me what and how much I could put into my body. That's not to say there wasn't great times. You know, I did have fun times. Not at the end, though. Not at the end. I remember partying up in the Hollywood Hills with movie stars and rock stars and having a, you know, thinking I'm just flying high, you know, that I've made it. I was just co-signing my own bullshit loan. You know, I was buying into the lie of my disease. I managed to get some money, and I relocated to Minneapolis. And lived with the a gentleman who would turn out to be the best man at my wedding. He was sober at the time. And it was there that this one event that would define the next 20-plus years of my life happened. I did 6 grams of cocaine one night. Somebody called my name. I turned around, and I took a Louisville Slugger to my head. I had a 6-inch hole from here to here. And I laugh about it now because it was just like in the cartoons. I took the bat to the head, I fell down, and boom, I sprung right back up, just like in the cartoons. Then I was in a coma for 2 weeks. And the doctor said the only thing that saved your life was the massive amounts of cocaine you did. I'm an alcoholic, so what do I hear? Cocaine's good. So I get released, I go fill the pain prescriptions, I go to the liquor store, and I go to the dealer, you know. And I stayed out there for roughly another year and a half. My last drink was March 16th, 1995. I'm Irish. My sobriety date is March 17th, so you cannot tell me that this program will not work if you want it and you want to take the action. And the thing about my last drink, I had no idea that that was the last drink I would ever take. I got thrown out of the bar before midnight. I was driving, and boom, rollers in the rear view. And they took me to Hungry Joe's, that's what they call the sheriff's department. And so you're emptying your pockets, and they said, "We'll count your money." I said, "Bullshit. I'm counting it." And all it took was for one sheriff to touch me, and it was on. I always loved violence. And when I was in the military, they taught me to be more efficient at it. And the thing about Hungry Joe's, they've got a cell in the back where there's no cameras. So I took a beating by 13 Berrien County sheriffs. That still did not think that was my last drink, because I had been in those situations before. I knew how to play the game. I knew what lawyers to get. I knew I'd have to sell a car to cover the fees. I would get it dropped down because the lawyer's so good, and I'd be on my merry way. When I came to the next morning, it's ironic, I love the blues. And this vivid, my first spiritual experience, vivid picture of me and the Grim Reaper standing at the crossroad of my life. saying you will change or you will be dead before you're 25. You know, I just turned 24. I come from a long line of alcoholics, most of whom have gone on to the other side clean and sober. So I knew where to go, but there was still that thing in the back of my mind that, you know, I might be a little unique. And my first sponsor, Hayden Herndon, he's dead now, I can use his last name. He used to be an old moonshiner from Arkansas. Complete opposite of me. You know, I wake up, my mind's going Mach 10, and he's just smooth, calm, relaxed. And he said, I want you to read the story, Keys of the Kingdom. If you're not familiar with that story, lady in there was in a coma for a couple of weeks. She didn't stop. She stayed out there for about another year and a half, 2 years. He said, see, you're not that different. You're not that unique. And where I got sober at, once the old-timers saw you were serious, it didn't matter if you had your sponsor. They was all in your ass. And, you know, I'm extremely grateful for that. Because these men taught me how to pay my bills, taught me how to grocery shop, taught me how to do my laundry, taught me how to be responsible for my actions. You know, that's the thing is, you know, you can say what it was like, what happened, what it's like. No, that's easy. That's a cop-out. What I was like, what happened, what I'm like now, oh, shit, I got to take ownership. I got to be responsible. I was sober about 6 months, and for some reason, I remember when I took that bat to the head, the nurse told me, she says, if you ever get any, like, water coming out of your nose, go to emergency room. And it was, I had a cerebral spinal fluid leak. So I flew back to Minneapolis, and of course, Murphy's Law, they couldn't find it. So I just dealt with it. Then one night I had gone to the Funny Bone, and I get home and I wake up and I'm in excruciating pain. And I have my wife take me to the emergency room. I had meningitis. And this is how my luck, you know, you say luck of the Irish. I'm sorry, read Irish history. We're not that lucky. Only three known cases of this virus reported to the CDC that I had. So then I had a neurosurgery to fix it. It didn't last that long. It started leaking again. Then a while down the road, boom, wouldn't you know it, I got meningitis again. Had another neurosurgery. Didn't fix it. And this was about when I met Tom. I just had that third neurosurgery right when I had met Tom. And so I call the surgeons, and my surgeon's out of town, so I see this other guy, and I've got sleeves, tattoos, and I don't know this guy from Adam. I'm sitting in the exam chair, and he comes in and he says, those are fucking great tattoos, man. He says, I found you a good Irish surgeon down at IU. His name's Dr. Ting. Yeah. Would you be interested in going to him? And I'm like, yeah, I would be. And so I always researched these new surgeons, and it just turned out that the neurosurgeon that was assisting him is one of the top five neurosurgeons in the world. My higher power hooking me up. So, you know, so far so good, knock on wood, since November 2014, I haven't had any spinal fluid leaks. The steps, you know, teach me to live life on life's terms, good or bad. I've had my father-in-law murdered, had my 12-year-old nephew killed in a freak ATV accident. Never once did a thought of a drink cross my mind. That's a miracle, because I am an alcoholic. It is in my DNA to want to drink. It is in my DNA to want to use that booze to kill any feelings I have. And that's the miracle of this program, is I get to feel life today. I get to be an active member of society today. Good or bad, I enjoy life today. You know, I used to think, you know, I quit drinking. Now I can't do a lot of the stuff I used to do. I was lying to myself, you know. I golf today. I hunt today. I fish today. I still go to concerts today. And the things I do this with are members of this fellowship. You know, and I can remember all these events, these good times. You know, because it all started when I walked through that door and I made myself vulnerable. Because that was the only way I was going to get any help. I had to become vulnerable and let these old-timers in so I could accept the help that they were more than willing to freely give me. You know, my home group, Little Red Book Study, I love it because we get a lot of newcomers. You know, there's about four of us with a couple decades, and then there's lots of newcomers. And the joy I get when I see the light click on in their head. You know, because I remember that. It's funny, a couple weeks ago we were doing, talking about the higher power, and this young kid, he's a thinker. You know, he's talking about, you know, I need to define it. I need to define this higher power. I says, no, you don't. I says, if you can define your higher power, it's not going to be greater than you are, is it? You know, I told him, I says, the higher power I have today is not the same one when I came through these doors. Because as I've grown and changed by working these steps, doing my best to live my life by these principles, my higher power has grown and changed with me. You know, the 11th step is my favorite step. And today I focus on the meditation, you know, to quiet my mind, to be at peace, you know, because I don't want those ripples in my pond today. That's not to say I don't think that I miss chaos once in a while. You know, I can still put myself in the jackpot. Tom knows the bypass. Drive my car 160 miles an hour down that bypass. Woo! I put myself in the jackpot. But mostly today, I'm not willing to accept the consequences and repercussions of bad decisions. It's a lot easier for me to do the next right thing. You know, I don't always know what that is, but I know what it's not. It's not to pick up a drink. I know that. That was proven, you know, over many years of active drinking. You know, I just kept digging a hole and digging a hole and digging a hole. And, you know, those foxhole prayers, get me out of this, I'll never do it again. And guess what? 5 minutes later, I'm putting myself in the jackpot that put me in the situation in the first place. Today I have an option. I don't have to do that. Today I get to enjoy life. I get to be a part of other people's lives because they allow me to. There was a time when my mother told me if I would ever step foot on her property, she would kill me. Today, if I lived in the same town, I would have keys to the house, to the cars, to everything. Relationships have been mended. Relationships are better today than they were even before I started drinking. Because I can care today. I can empathize today. I remember I was 3 years sober. My grandmother died. And I was honored that I was the only one in the room when she passed. And she was a lady who really never understood drinking, but she never gave up hope. She never gave up hope. You know, I get to be a part of that today. You know, I get to help people at their lowest points and at their highest points. I get to be a service. I get to do these things today. That's not to say that, you know, those character defects, that self-centeredness, that ego, that pride does not creep up from time to time. But the beautiful thing today is, I've got the answers right here to tell me what to do, you know. Right here, my owner's manual. I'm a firm believer everybody's book should look like this. I actually received this from my father back in 1988. Of course, it sat in a box till 1995. It would have been a month ago yesterday. He would have celebrated his 45th year on this journey. That's one of the things. He got to see me sober before he passed. All these wonderful things happened because I couldn't live life the way I was living it anymore. Guess what? The man who was not afraid of anything was really afraid to die. I really wanted to live. And I just didn't know it. This spiritual experiences. I just had a couple of the, couple weeks ago. A good friend of mine, his mom just passed, and his stepfather is a world-class peckerwood. And he would tell me, about this. I'm like, you got to let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Well, something was bugging me a couple weeks ago, and it's that aha moment. Well, you dumb shit. You were telling Dave to let it go. Why don't you take your own advice? I'm still a slow learner and a quick forgetter. I just found out, which is kind of wild after all the brain surgeries I've had, that I actually have both frontal lobe brain damage. Also because of that one event, I'm epileptic now. But I try not to use those as an excuse for my behavior. You process information, it comes in, it's in the back, and then when you want it, it's in the front. Well, my neurons, the wires aren't there anymore, so I can get very frustrated. But I try not to use that as an excuse, because it's not fair to the people that are in my life. I use these tools in every instance, every situation of my life. Because if it could remove the drink, it surely can help me deal with these other situations. And that's amazing. That is amazing. I've buried sponsees. I've got one in Jackson Prison. I don't get asked to sponsor a whole lot because I'm hardcore, and they get scared. I still go to a big book meeting a week, step meeting a week, a speaker meeting a week, I'd chair a meeting a week. I have to stay involved. I have to stay active. You know, this program has given my life meaning today. Whereas before, you know, I was just stumbling in the dark. You know, trying to make the best out of any situation I had put myself in. You know, today my life has purpose. I've met my wife in this fellowship. And we'll be married, I think, 19 years this September. I'd have never believed you if you told me I'd be in a committed relationship for 19 years. Never would believe you. You know, all these wonderful gifts that I receive, you know, it's all exponential. I put this much in to the program, I get this much out. I put this much in, I get this much out. That's why I can never repay what this program has given to me. That's why I have to do my best. I have a responsibility to be there to the alcoholic who's still struggling. And I can never forget that. Because that's what those men were there for me when I came on this journey, when the light bulb finally clicked on in my thick Irish skull. And it's made all the difference. You know, I have a life today that I could not dream of. You know, it is full. And it's not material things. I like Bob Marley. You know, he says, what do you mean by riches? A fat bank account? He says, no, I don't have riches. He says, the riches I have are the people in my life, the feelings that I have inside, the ability to help my brother. Those are the riches I have today. I'd like to thank Tom for calling me and inviting me out here. Excuse me. Yeah, I've got a little cold, so I think I'm going to wrap it up.